This is episode 140 of the A News Podcast, which covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchist news. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, which you can add to, if you want, see you at your favorite non-sectarian anarchist site.
Editorial. Saying something nice. I like it when people say they appreciate my work, or my perspective, or my humor, especially if they express that appreciation by demonstrating that they actually get it, whatever it is, and are not just saying something nice. Just saying something nice is significant here, as it speaks to the context of social assumptions, associations, and expectations that are expressed in things like the shit sandwich, I mean, the compliment sandwich, or like telemarketers opening their spiel with a sincere-sounding, "How are you today?" or any other of a million ways that apparent friendliness and acceptance and agreement are shallow faces over utilitarianism, greed, and depression, to name just a few. I am not alone in my semi-paranoid distrust. In fact, I'd say that it's an at least generational, more like multi-generational reaction to maybe A, too many people, and definitely B, advertising. I trust conflict more than getting along. I expect that people will pretend to be nice, will pretend to agree with me, those are not the same thing, but are often connected, will be hesitant or dishonest about expressing actual disagreement. This sometimes looks like talking about disagreements that don't actually exist as a way to avoid actual disagreement. Subtle, right? Anyway, this expectation of mine is a survival mechanism, but also plays into a cultural tendency to perceive and react more to discontent or unhappiness, to focus more on things that make us unhappy than on things that we are satisfied by or even joyous about. A concrete example. A couple weeks ago, I engaged in a back and forth with one of apparently two people who critiqued my reading of something that touched me. I spent some time thinking about and responding to fairly empty and or bad faith readings than I did talking about the positive feedback I got for the reading. It's okay that I'm challenged more by people who disagree with what I'm doing. It's okay that I'm conflict attracted. But to the extent that it plays into a cultural tendency to emphasize the negative, that it rewards people who throw out flame bait as their only way to connect to people, for example, that's a sad concession to current culture, and to some of the worst of internet culture in particular. It's also okay that I haven't yet figured out a more interesting way to respond to positive feedback than to A, accept it, B, ask questions that make it sound like I'm fishing for compliments, which of course I won't do. This isn't particularly an anarchist question, maybe, it's pretty big. But what are we to do when being positive and being negative are both owned by much bigger social currents that are beyond our influence in any scenario except the very individual or smallest ones? I do continue to find it more engaging, more interesting, more potentially educational and revelatory to think about how I am wrong or how I misstated something than to be told that I did something well or am right. I guess I'm saying that there are things that are valid about that tendency, and there are also ways that it acts in the world that I don't like, and that's not even going into the difference between online communication and face-to-face. Section 4.547 of Chisel's Ongoing Notes to Self.
When you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you. When you're laughing, the sun.
What's new this week? Slow Burning Fuse UK Election Special. A charming comic book, full color, not exactly ready to print, but close, with more or less one-liner challenges to electoral politics and thinking. Some of the images are deterrent, which are usually enjoyable. Not deep, but evocative of depth. Thumbs up. Although the argument that all means must be consistent with goals, which is what the text part of the announcement hammers on, is a bit simplistic for these days. Satisfyingly pure, but simplistic.
Interviews with anarchists concerning the Yellow Vest movement from Freedom News UK. This is a translation from the French of an interview with anarchists originally appearing in the Brazilian anarchist magazine Crônica Subversiva. A pretty good description of the ways these anarchists have participated, and some reasons others haven't, in the titular Gilets Jaunes. Quote, however, a certain confusion reigns amongst the Yellow Vest movement's ideas and perspectives. This is due to the originality of the movement's composition. There are mostly people who hate the system and the bourgeoisie, sometimes named oligarchy. There are a lot of people self-proclaimed apolitical or apartisan. and there are also a lot of politicized people from anarchists and anti-fa to the far right, alongside members of different political parties, sovereigntists, nationalists, and or far left. Because of this, I decided it was important to actively participate in the political debate inside the movement, which meant attending the different assemblies, distributing pamphlets, and writing on the walls. Well, it's not as if I don't normally do this, but I just felt it was very important to do this during this movement, unquote.
Not falling for it. How the uprising in Chile has outlasted state repression. Another optimistic title from CrimeThink. CrimeThink's At This Point To Be Expected brief overview of recent events for the purpose of encouraging participants and onlookers about the potential of mass resistance in the streets does include, in this case, some more engaging mindfuckery along the following lines. Quote, speculation has circulated about the arsons to the effect that they were orchestrated or permitted by the security forces. Certainly, police in Chile are well known for engaging in undercover operations, and U.S. intelligence agencies have engaged in all manner of disruptive activities to delegitimize social movements in Chile and elsewhere. At the same time, all around the world, whenever ordinary people manage to get the better of the authorities, those who take it for granted that the state is the only protagonist of history always attribute this to the work of agent provocateurs. Is it really possible that all the arsons of October 18 were the work of police agents? What would the government stand to gain by arranging for the destruction of its own public transit infrastructure? It might seem strategic to attribute the arsons to police agents in order to delegitimize the police in the eyes of the general public, but this could have the unintended effect of mobilizing popular rage against the most radical or confrontational participants in the movement on the absurd grounds that they must be police infiltrators, no less. Rather than legitimizing the sort of confrontational tactics that a powerful movement must sometimes employ, this approach implies that what is needed is better policing, unquote. This passage reflects more of how my mind thinks, at least, and leads to some different kinds of pondering. If the state is better at no business as usual than radicals are, perhaps, I mean, obviously their goals are different, but what if we could co-opt their activities and build on their attempts at manipulation? Yeah, delusions of grandeur for everybody.
Anarchist defendants and network case on hunger strike in Russia, from AMW English. Quote, the anarchist defendants in the network case, Arman Sagenbayev, Dmitry Chelentsev, and Maxim Ivankin, announced the beginning of a hunger strike. At the trial, Arman Sagenbayev testified about the torture that the anarchists arrested in the network case have faced. We were tortured, all our testimonies were false, and were given not just because of threats and pressure, but because you feel as though skin is being removed from you alive. Yes, I was tortured with electric shock on November 5th, 2017. I described the subject. It was a box of rectangular shape, brown, on which there were two regulators, voltage and current. They tied the wires to my big toes, Sagenbayev said in court. Following him, the defendants Dmitry Chelentsev and Maxim Ivankin announced a hunger strike, unquote. There's a bit more in the post about the background of the case, and about more torture. Always more torture. Ugh.
Trial with the accused in Phoenix 2, from Anarchist Black Cross and Czech Republic. A short announcement about the beginning of the trial for five people and a call to support them through solidarity action or being in court with them. Quote, let them know you are not apathetic to their future as you are not toward the freedom of all of us. Any way of expressing support is welcomed, unquote. We all remember what solidarity means.
Script amendment operation update on the bank account in support of imprisoned anarchists, from Act for Freedom. This super short comment is logistical, noting a change in bank account for donations, and correcting information about sentences of the five imprisoned and that 18 were acquitted, and finally an appeal for donations since there are big legal costs.
Two anarchists arrested in Belarus for the attack on jail with Molotov cocktail, from Praman.io. A short report back about two arrested for vandalism and property damage that is almost a haiku about how messy arrests can be. One seems to have turned on the other, but we're all just hoping that the translation is faulty, and that anarchists know how not to talk to the police, even though those cops torture us and spend years studying how to get us to talk. May both of the arrestees come out of this stronger, wiser, and more dedicated.
No COP 25, all bullets will be returned. A call to meet in Madrid for one of those summit confrontations we've heard so much about. Big party complete with brawls? Or trial by fire to winnow the groups into their respective camps? Or set up for death and exhaustion? All of the above? At any rate, quote, on the other hand, neither do we trust that politics gestated in parliaments and offices will stop the destruction or stop the way to the collapse that is increasingly inevitable. but we trust in the ability of everyone to act individually or in groups. That's why we want to make a call for decentralized action to point to the responsibles of environmental destruction. Politicians won't act against capitalism's interests, but we do. Against climate change, direct action. Attack those who destroy the earth, unquote.
Okay, Bookchin, from Medium. Not sure what that title is about. What's okay, exactly? But this is an anti-Bookchin, pro-egoist screed accusing Bookchin's book Social Anarchism or Lifestyle Anarchism and its proponents of falsely framing anarchists, anarchist history, and anarchist goals. One could call this a modern retelling and mild dumbing down of Bob Black, but that kind of restatement can be helpful, I think. There are people who will never read Bob Black, either because of access or because of reputation, and the points are worth knowing about, no matter where they come from. Quote, what Bookchin does not realize is that this type of collectivist, programmatic opposition has become ingrained in the social order itself. Mass politics, with its programs for social change, has become part of the status quo. The system itself would much rather have people mimicking its structures and playing within its rules, as opposed to the infinitely diverse forms of resistance available to all individuals at any moment. The state understands how to deal with the same dogmatic resistance it has faced for centuries. It is not prepared for outbursts of individuality, fluid and innumerable in their scope, unquote. Little bit of hope there. The piece gives an incorrect reading of primitivism and at least some anti-tech thinking, but appropriately criticizes Bookchin for authoritarian biases and strawman arguments. One thumb up, I guess.
Confidence, Courage, Connection, Trust from North Shore Counter Info. I really like this piece from an activist, which is about how to redefine Operation Security to include a larger perspective. That is, anarchists want to be inclusive and encouraging, to appreciate newcomers as well as to stay safe from repression and not give information to our enemies. It suggests being strategic about security rather than tactical and basing decision-making in an accurate, thoughtful assessment of capacities and goals. And it's based in pretty extensive personal experience. Aside from the activism, what's not to like? It reiterates the point also emphasized in the book by Glick, War at Home, that accusing people of being cops doesn't help anything, since behavior is more the issue than whether someone is being paid or not. Also includes a section on social media specifically, just generally a grounded read with practical problems and practical responses. Quote, all I would suggest is that explicit conversations about risk and security be incorporated into the different kinds of work such organizations take on, since they have different needs. Empowering committees to decide their own security practices and basis of unity is a great step, as is welcoming individual initiatives by members associating on the basis of affinity, meaning the organizing structure is flexible enough to accommodate different ways of organizing for different kinds of activity, unquote. This whole piece is more upbeat than seems reasonable, but cool. Cool, cool, cool.
Bastard Conference 2019. Despite the extreme change in direction of the longest-running anarchist reading group in the U.S., is that right? Could be. Fuck it, I'm leaving it in. Some people from the new group are determined to continue the tradition of an anarchist post-left theory get-together, starring some stalwart voices and at least one new one. Maybe Wolfie will even actually show up this time. Good luck to all.
Lebanon, a revolution against sectarianism from CrimeThink. Another upbeat article from CrimeThink, complete with attractive young brown-skinned woman holding a protest sign. OMG, these stories make me feel so jaded. Anyway, there are a ton of uprisings around the world. CrimeThink would prefer to pay attention to them and not the general failure of such uprisings to make systemic change along the lines that they say they want. Rinse, dry, repeat. Quote, on the night of October 13th to 14th, wildfires ravaged Lebanon and parts of Syria. We lost up to 3 million trees, 1,200 hectares, in a country of 10,500 square kilometers, 4,035 square miles, nearly doubling the annual average of tree loss in just 48 hours. The government's response was disastrous. Lebanon had only 3 helicopters donated by civilians who pitched in that were just sitting at the airport because they had fallen into disuse as the government had not maintained them. Although the government had allocated money for maintenance, it had disappeared, as so many funds do in Lebanon, into the hands of the sectarian upper class. The fires were eventually put out by a combination of volunteer civil servants. Civil defense hasn't been paid in decades, including people from the Palestinian refugee camps, random volunteers, aircraft sent by Jordan, Cyprus, and Greece, and luckily enough, rain. It could have turned out much, much worse, unquote. Yep, people get mad when governments don't do what they're supposed to. Doesn't mean that they want no government. No, it's great. People are feeling like they can make a difference. Maybe this time, they will.
For those with fiery hearts, a cleaned-up translation of a text written collectively by anarchists arrested in Trentino, Italy, during the anti-anarchist Operation Renata. Yay for good translations. Coming from people who are locked up but unwilling to accept imprisonment, this text is a moving statement of anarchist principles and a refusal to shy away from actions. Quote, "These last months and years, we have seen dozens of companions end up in prison, some with long sentences. We invite you to gather your forces and strike back at these attacks on our movement. In acting, we will inevitably make mistakes. Our bodies and minds will have to shape themselves to new practices and ideas of freedom. They want to see us sink into resignation and confusion, but they have already failed. Seeing as our prosecutors like playing with words, especially those of others, as well as with acts, Renata, with its meaning of rebirth, seems like yet another lexical mistake, because the fire in our hearts is reborn with every wrong we suffer." Unquote.
Swain2020.org from the forums. Usually we don't comment on forums, but this one stands out, as it is about and from one of our favorite anarchist jokers, who is again running for office from inside prison, the only anarchist nominee for election who I will ever support, Sean Swain. For any anarchist who finds themselves in a voting booth out of amusement or confusion, or both, make Swain your write-in candidate.
Anti-terror operation leads to three comrades arrested, one comrade wanted. From Anarchists Worldwide. Quote, "In an operation that began on Friday, November 8th, Greek counterterrorism police raided 13 homes and took 15 people in for questioning. According to Greek corporate media, two men, aged 41 and 45, were subsequently arrested on charges of carrying out terrorist acts, possession of explosives, violation of the weapons law, and tampering with official documents. A 39-year-old woman was also arrested for violation of the weapons law. Counterterrorism police are still seeking a 46-year-old man." Unquote. May our underground services be broad and subtle and solidarity shine in many colors.
Sabotage of wind measurement mats in the Grand Est regions from Anarchists Worldwide. Quote, "During the night of Sunday to Monday, November 3rd, 10 masts of wind measurements were taken in the Far East. We dropped 6 and damaged 3 that have not yet fallen. Surprise! These masts are 100 meters high. They are all made of metal. They have cables aligned everywhere on 3 axes to ensure their stability. And even if you cut the cables, it makes bada boom. What's also nice is that they are in the countryside and often well insulated. To cut the steel cables, you can cut all the wires with a cutting pliers or a pliers, or whatever you think is appropriate that hangs in your toolbox. From the furthest away to the nearest mast until everything collapses, usually after 3 to 4 cut cables. Cut them all in the same axis because the mast will fall in the opposite direction. Think in advance which direction you want to run away, smart guy. Be brave because depending on the size of the cables, you have to work hard. Don't hesitate to move away a little when it falls because it makes a hell of a mess. Certainly it's very funny, but it's a little scary too." Unquote. My favorite kind of communique, practical and funny.
Audio. Anarchy Bang, introducing episode 45, Creativity. 2 hours. Quote, "When we discussed music a few weeks ago, a lot of tension built up around the sound of an anarchist chord. Where does content end and the something else that makes music music begin? This week, we discuss the broader case. Our co-host is a working artist who has also done a lot of visual work for LBC. What makes creative work anarchist or not? What is creative and what is not? This is the first of our final 4 episodes. Join us." Unquote.
This is the end of the line. I've clearly read every sign. The way you glance at me indifferently and take your hand from my...
Topic of the week. Anarchists take the stage. Anarchy is a story. The way that we tell it, the characters we emphasize, diminish, or omit altogether shape the way that we relate to it, the way we relate to the world, and the way we relate to each other. There are, as with anything, many ways of telling anarchy's story, of weaving together the lives of individual people into something larger than themselves, of giving narrative structure to what otherwise might seem like isolated acts of rebellion. Two of these structures I heard are 1. The wave system, first wave, second wave. And two, something like, humans were anarchists for 99% of their time on Earth, and then something went wrong. Both of these constructions cast castes of rebels, anarchists or not, and both set anarchy moving on a particular path, crafting a particular anarchist story. So to keep pushing a bad metaphor, let's cast our story of anarchy. Who would you choose as the stars? Would they be criminally underrepresented anarchist figures? Non-anarchist writers, artists, criminals, your grandmother? How do these figures fit into your definition of anarchy, and how do they change the story of anarchy from what it is into what it could be? Welcome, Plast.
Hi, how you doing?
Not bad. So, what is on your mind regarding this topic?
Okay, so the thing I really like about this topic of the week is it kind of really puts the emphasis on the power of narrative.
Yeah.
And how it influences our behavior, because I think one of the things that we as humans really like put on a pedestal is narrative, and history essentially is narrative. So when I'm looking at the examples that you use, the wave system and the 99% example as well, what really got me thinking is how those specific examples are usually made to serve a specific purpose. Like when I hear that the 99%, like that retelling of history is something I feel like someone who's like anti-civ would use in order to get their point across. You know what I mean?
It's a common primitivist story.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, what are the roles? How can history or anarchist history be reframed in different ways other than that? And what would you try to accomplish by doing that?
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a different way that you would use?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say because those two things that you cited have really been like ingrained. Like when I read these dozens of pieces, they usually either use that framework or the other framework. The first one assumes that we're sort of barreling towards some more ideal version of anarchism. And the other one, of course, saying that we need to sort of get back something that's really been lost.
Yeah, we've fallen from grace.
Yeah, apparently we have, fortunately. But what I also liked was the underrepresented anarchist figures. Why the inclusion of that line?
Yeah, I mean, who knows what the motivation of the author is. I do think that when I go here, I tend to think about how my favorite experiences of anarchism, except that like the town that people are living in are sort of the universes that they live in. Actually, here's an example from punk rock days. I'm actually part of a Facebook group called I Used to Go to the Ice Pick Back in the Day. And it's literally 100 people in a Facebook group who used to go to the same show venue in Western Michigan in the 1980s. And it's mostly, of course, it's people just reflecting back on their nostalgia of like this particular club venue and the particular insanity of what happened there. It used to be a place where G.G. Allin lived for a number of years. So it had like a notoriety a little bigger than a lot of other venues, but I definitely, I go there for nostalgia. And and that's an example of a story that, you know, really a couple hundred kids created together and somehow it's still real.
It really has me thinking of the very first sentence, which is anarchy is a story, which I feel like sort of takes this entire thing and puts it under one umbrella. And there's sort of this, I want to say, implication that in order to have a good anarchy, one must recognize all the nuances and the diversity and the differences that have gone all through, quote, anarchist history, which is a term I kind of don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the author has some sort of some sort of answer that they want to hear, but are not really just hinting at it directly, if you get what I'm saying.
I mean, this was actually one of the reasons why I was so attracted to the Waves story myself, meaning that I think that it's really, I do share this thing in common with people who I otherwise share nothing with. You know, one version of the story that we could be telling is the idea that for many people, they define anarchism as the story of the working class liberating itself. For those people, they basically entirely live in the sort of frame of reference of industrial society. You know, they're referring to a working class that, you know, like has dirty hands or something. From their perspective, their story of what anarchism is has very little to do with where I, you know, sort of spend my time and energy. But in fact, you know, that doesn't mean it's valid or that it's not valid.
I mean, I personally would disagree, but I understand where you're coming from. You seem to be a lot more tolerant of different strains of anarchism. I've always assumed that was a part of your quote personal anarchy, the desire to see like a proliferation of all different kinds of anarchism, but you know, having a common thread between all of them for some reason. I'm not, I guess I don't really understand that entirely, but I think I get like bits and bobs of it. I just really would like to know, because, like, as I said earlier, I think that history is a tool people use to advance their agendas. Like you mentioned earlier with the Red Anarchists redefining anarchist history as, like, a class struggle kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Their agenda is to, you know, create an anarchist, not an anarchist world, but an anarcho-communist world or a Marxist world or whatever, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to know what this person is trying to do. Because I don't believe that they're unbiased. Because clearly they have some sort of angle. I just would like to know what it is. Like, well, what kind of anarchist this person is? What kind of anarchy this person wants to see?
They are demonstrating their perspective. I mean, even by the examples that they're using, right? And for instance, they didn't use a class struggle example in talking about the different types of structures that they were articulating about how anarchists tell their stories. It's also worth mentioning that, you know, most likely the author of this is someone who's part of the collective rather than an anonymous person. And so that's only like 8 people.
And they're probably. I mean, I'm curious as to what your thoughts are in regards to how you think history can be used going forward, like further. Because people may not like this, but I feel like we have really not a lot of options for history in terms of how we use it. I feel like it can only really be used as a tool. So, if it were up to you, how would you want to use history, specifically anarchist history, of course?
Yeah, I like to keep my history very temporary, very word of mouth, very much like the stories that you or I tell. I tend to hate everything that becomes like a discipline. So as an example, I often refer to my criticism of anthropology, but my criticism of anthropology is partially the fact that it considers itself to be a high, you know, a hoity-toity sort of like way of seeing the world, or to put it a little differently and more gently, anthropology is a type of storytelling that I basically approve of if it, you know, sort of stays humble, but that I very much stop approving of as soon as it sort of starts to tell everyone that it's the way to understand the world.
All right.
So that would be an example of what's being approached here. You know, history is fine as long as you can kill Alexander the Great. You know, history starts to really suck if Alexander the Great is you know, who created the ancient world and we have to understand and agree with sort of his mythology before we can sort of understand anything else. So as long as history stays humble, it's totally fine. By its nature, anarchist history stays very humble. I mean, one of the best anarchist storytellers in North America, although I think he lives elsewhere right now, is this guy named Barry Pateman. And, you know, he more or less sounds like a red anarchist, but he's more or less been like an insurrectionary type red anarchist since the 70s. And he's amazing storyteller. He is definitely someone who can get you excited about anarchism.
Right. I mean, I like that too. Like, the idea of history being that sort of thing that sort of you can draw inspiration from. You know, it's like, I don't want to make too many assumptions, but I'm guessing that the way pre-civilized cultures would use history is like a way to teach lessons, as well as a way of you know, inspiring new and different ways to act, things of that nature. And I feel like most anarchists use history the same way. Like, when I see people talk about anarchist history, it's usually they're looking for something, for a tactic, or they're looking for something to motivate them to do something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess for me, for a long time, I sort of used my modified language and refused to use the sort of proper language. So even though, of course, I agree with what you're saying, I would say the same thing without using the term history. So I would say that anarchists, the best anarchist historians are anarchist storytellers, as an example.
I see what you mean, yeah. I mean, I have to agree with you with that. I mean, like, for me, the term history is very academic, and I feel like the whole idea of like a comprehensive, inclusive anarchist history kind of like forces people to take on this spectator position where they rather watch things flourish and comment and do cross like analysis and shit like that, rather than actually be a part of history itself. You know what I mean? So I'm not really a fan of that. Like, the wave system gives me that kind of vibe, that kind of academic vibe.
Yeah, I mean, it comes from an academic, the terminology, the first wave, second wave, third wave. I mean, the reason you use it is to sort of try to describe our projectuality or whatever in the fuck in the context of a place where people think about that sort of thing. Like, I wouldn't necessarily expect most people to talk about the difference between the first wave and second wave anarchism. Other than more or less people who are trying to study and or understand anarchism as like big epic forces battling, you know, on the stage of history.
I mean, for me personally, the wave system is more of like a necessary evil than anything. It just helps organize this wide library of different ideas and potential things that I could use personally. And I just recognize that it's just part of the leftist strain that's still left in anarchism. And I'm like, I don't like it, but it has been useful. And if something new and better came, I'd be more than happy to embrace that. But obviously, I definitely want to move away from these massive analyses, because it just doesn't sit well with me. I like that one question, though, that the author asked, just your grandmother. And that really rubs me the right way. I like that, because it's, I mean, if we're anarchists, like, our history is anarchist history.
It's true.
And that idea sort of sits well with me, you know? Because ideally, I mean, we should be telling our own stories, right?
Yep. So, and if you were going to tell your own story, if you were to put your version of what anarchism is onto a stage, who would the roles be? Would it just be the story of Not Noel's adventures?
Well, honestly, I couldn't really give you that good of an answer for now. I mean, it feels like I was introduced to this like wild, crazy thing, like solely through books, and it invigorated me enough to, it felt like I was really a participant. And then after a while, you sort of like develop an imposter syndrome because you realize that the things you read about in anarchist history and the things that you see everywhere and other people doing, you can't just easily do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that kind of missed me about anarchist history, because it's just, like I said, it really makes some people just want to like sit on the sidelines, and they sort of, I don't want to say, I hate this term, I'm sorry, but like they sort of like appropriate the culture of an existing group and sort of like say, hey, I'm also this thing too. I identify with this without actually, you know, doing anything. Because I think we all get like a certain sense of satisfaction when we read something that, like, I don't know, like Bellamy wrote or Desert or some shit like that. We feel like kinship with them. But I think that sometimes that feeling can override our desire to actually act in ways that we really want to. It gives you like a false sense of satisfaction. You know what I mean? It can be a spectacle sometimes.
I mean, the other way to say this is to say that you are both part of a community, but it also does not exist. And so navigating that where the beginning, the middle, and end is a challenge.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you very much for this conversation.
All right, no problem.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Greg. The What's New was written by Jackie and Greg, and read by Chisel and Greg. The editorial is by Chisel, not by Greg. And we thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week, Anarchists Take the Stage. To contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org is where you can email. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chatroom linked on A News.